Hello and welcome back to this episode of the Box Out Boys. I am Skylar Reesberg, your co-host, joined by our fellow co-host, Spencer Clark. And we are still dancing. You know, we're still shaking. We're still shimmying. The tournament, round one, the round of 64 and round of 32 is over. You know, we've taken it all in. It was absolutely electric, honestly, on my part. I think we'll get into how do you feel about this tournament, but we're moving on to the sweet, sweet, sweet 16 and the elite of the elite of the eight. Hey. Clark, how are you doing?
Man.
Got the zoomies. I'm
good. Feeling good, looking better. Shout out Drake. I'm good. How can you not be good? We just got 4 days of action-packed basketball. That's the goddamn dream. Say,
it's a lot, and it is heaven. It's heaven to be in that moment and just try to plan everything around. We got these games going on. We got to see what's going down here in this bracket. And I want to real quick, before we dive into our segments here today, get some general thoughts just on the tournament, because I think while it's going on, we can't help but talk about it. Obviously, you know, how do we feel about it? Have there been enough upsets? Let's give it a go.
I think if you base your entire March Madness on if it's good or not based on upsets, you're a miserable fucking human being. And you're not a real hoop head. We've gotten some of the best basketball. And this next weekend is shaped up to be just game after game incredible. So if you are out there and you're like, oh, March Madness, not a ton of fun, not a ton of upsets, and you're kind of just a casual bitch, because it's great. Been a blast. There's been upsets. Things are sprinkled in there. But we got competitive games for week two. You can't have both. You can't have a upset filled weekend one, and then action-packed high level basketball week two.
And I think there are a lot of people out there, those so-called whiny bitches, that, you know, probably do feel that way about the tournament, because let's be honest, the last 3-4 years we've had we've had a 16 seed or 15 seed win and make a little run, you know, from some other seeds or those seeds. And this year it was, I don't want to say it was chalky, because we had our upsets. Oakland over Kentucky. The 11 seeds are dominating, and we may not have many double digit seeds now, but you're right. You know, that's what's awesome about March Madness in this tournament is the variance every year. And it's just, you never know what you're going to get. Just when you think you got the formula for March Madness, it flips up on you and it goes, you know what? Why don't we maybe have a year where all the 1 and 2 seeds are in the Elite Eight? I don't know. That'd be wild.
Right.
I'd go for that chalk. And to your point about the games, you're totally right. This Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, I mean, depending on, we just have one double-digit seed left, NC State. We'll see how they fare against Marquette, but it's just good matchups all around. And so last week we made our bracket, and you know, it's honestly, it's doing pretty well for the most part. But what we're going to do today is we're going to roll through a little Sweet 16 and on. We're doing the second chance here. So we're going to try to run it down here, give some picks, and maybe crown a new winner. Maybe keep with our same winner of Houston, because they're still in it. And if you're still in it, if your winner's still in it, your bracket's always got a fighting chance.
Right.
So without further ado, yeah?
Would you venture to say that most people's Final Four is still very much intact? It has to be, right?
I'd say for the general public, yes. I think for a lot of people that were trying to get a little cute with it, you know, hand up over here, that Final Fours could be gone. I know two of mine are gone. I know from the bracket that we made, just Baylor's gone. Houston, Tennessee, and ISU are still in the Final Four. So, I mean, if you went chalk, which I don't want to just say that's a casuals, you know, casual fan to do, because it's definitely not, but a lot of casuals do. If you went chalk, you're looking good right now. You got a lot of opportunity to really flex and say, hey, I knew what was going to happen. I knew this was going to happen. And look at my bracket here to back it up.
Couldn't agree more with you. Could not.
Should we get into it? Milan Manchilovic. With that being said, I think we should jump into our most excited game we're about. We got UConn San Diego State up here. We'll get to you. You'll have your moment. But I think we need to go right into this. Iowa State, you know, we never said we're that big of fans of them, but we are big Iowa State fans on this podcast. You know, cat's out of the bag. Once you get to the Sweet 16, we're going to start repping for you. And we got Milan Momcilic. We got Taman Lifsey. We got a lot of fun basketball to be had here in this game. This is the contrast of two different styles here, the clash of styles. And, you know, Illinois's got the number one offense. Iowa State's got the number one defense. I mean, depending who you're talking to, where you're looking at, but they're both up there in enough metrics where we're going to say it's number one versus number one here in a fun clash of styles. Illinois, Iowa State, do I even need to ask you who you like in this game?
I mean, I like Iowa State. Illinois looks so good right now, though. So good.
Their games haven't even been close.
No.
They've cakewalked through.
Blowing people up.
Iowa State's been a little close in the first half for both these games. South Dakota State was a little closer at certain times than we care for it. Washington State was tied at half. But, you know, here we are, just two dominant teams, Big 12 versus Big 10. Looking at it, Illinois absolutely cakewalked. But you know what? They played a 14 seed Morehead State. No shade. That was a good team, you know, for the likes of a Morehead sure. State, you know. DeQuain, fucked on a BYU team.
They had a 14-11 walkthrough.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm getting at.
But they've been in those games. And what do you do in the? What do you expect them to dominate in those games? And they've done that. So you can't fault them, really. It's not like they've played those competitive. They haven't been competitive basketball games.
Yeah, they put Harris up 85 Jr. plus.
Yeah. I mean, they're scoring a ton.
And how do you think these two match up, though, with, like you said, Terrence Shannon Jr.? They also have Coleman Hawkins. I would take on any team. Damascus, I mean, just head to toe with that roster. They've got five guys out there that can score. Iowa State's got five guys on the floor, typically at all times, that are going to be pretty defensive and not a liability. How do you see this game going? What needs to happen for each team to win here? I want to know this.
So
I need to know.
I think for Iowa State, they obviously have the number one defense in the country. So the thing is that Illinois' pace of play, they like to get up and down. They're just very good offensively. So Iowa State's key to winning this is to just slow them down and make them play a gritty basketball game and almost make them quit, get physical with them.
Yeah.
Just like any other Iowa State game, really, and Houston for that matter, a lot of it depends on how the whistle is, how they're calling it. Are they letting the boys play? If they're letting the boys play, that's great news for Iowa State. If they're not, right. It's not great news. Not that they foul a ton, but they do play a more physical brand of basketball. And it's working.
You're talking Iowa State right now. Plays more Iowa physical. State. Yes.
More physical. So for Iowa State to win this game, they have to slow the game down a little bit. Just in half-court sets, slow it down. And then they need to get takeaways. That's been it all year. They need to get takeaways. And I think this Illinois team's phenomenal, but this Illinois team is not super disciplined.
Defensive side of the ball.
Right. I'm hoping Iowa State comes out and punches them in the mouth because I don't know that they'll
love that.
I don't know they'll rebound for that. So I hope they punch them in the mouth right away. And if they do that, I think the chances of them winning are good. But Iowa State's also had more defensive laps in the last two games than I really have remembered them having in Big 12 play. So we got to get that cleaned up. It's nice that they get a full week. Hassan and Taman both need a little rest, the shoulder and the ankle.
Yep.
I think it'll be
I didn't really see anything in that Washington State game that kind of made me wary, though, that those injuries are lingering. So I feel pretty confident a week off, they'll be 100%.
I agree. The first half, they were playing Taman not a ton, and then they kind of recognized in the second half that they needed to make it happen a little bit more, and he got more run in the second half, as he should have. But I think a week, I mean, he looked good, so I'm not worried about that. So, I mean, I'm taking Iowa State in this game. I have to.
I got to – ooh. Let me put that back here. Okay, I got to agree with you. Yeah, I mean, just looking at these two paces, we got to take Iowa State. I think the key for success here, you nailed it. I haven't really seen Iowa State be a big come from behind team, you know, late in the game where they just have those scores that are going to, you know, make those shots. Not that they don't have them. It's just not something that this team, it's not a position that Iowa State wants to be in. So no. Because we haven't seen it, I'm not sure how well that would go for them. If they get out on a run right away, I think it's looking really good. They control the pace. They control the lead. That's exactly where Iowa State wants to be. So playing a game of catch up, you see that going on. I don't like their chances there. I think if you're a betting man, whatever the over-under is in this game, you like Illinois, you got to take that over. If you like Iowa State, you got to take that under there. And other than that, yeah, I guess not much else to say. I mean, this is going to be a good one. Contain Terrence Shannon and get those turnovers, get those takeaways. Do what you're known for. I trust defense more deeper in the tournament. So we're going to take that and say, hey, good season, Illinois. Moving on, though. To nobody's surprise, right up above, we got UConn. I mean, yeah, no shit. They're back.
They've marched.
They've dominated way more. We were just talking Illinois racking it up. UConn has looked absolutely insane. A force to be reckoned with. I think they take it over the San Diego State team, who I was hoping it'd be Auburn here, but we saw what happened with them. You know, point for the nerds there. That was a big win for them. Right when Baker Mazzara went out of that game, like right at the beginning, I knew there was trouble to be had, and the trouble came.
What a blatant bow.
Dude.
I mean, what a blatant
bow. What was he thinking?
I think he was just pissed. He was seeing red. Have you ever just seen red and hit someone?
I have, but you can't be seeing red like this. It's all on the line. I think they were drinking the Kool-Aid a little too much after that SEC championship. I think Baker, Janai, those guys, I think they were online surfing the web a little too much. Like, ooh, Auburn, right. Big dark horse. Nice. We're in the Final Four already. They read those tweets and we're like, we're in. And now they're fucking gone and we got to deal with the one team carrying the Mountain West. We do get Jaden Ledee. I just think it's the Jaden Ledee show over there, and UConn rolls.
I think UConn rolled. I love Jaden Ledee. He's so good. The growth he's had from year four to year five is unprecedented, but it's unfortunate for him that he's their best player and he has to go up against. He'll probably get Donovan Clinton all game and just get fucking worked, because as good as he is, that kid's just fucking better, way better.
Out of this tournament, Dan Hurley is the only current coach to have a national championship. So, I mean, unless they do it again, which is very possible, we're going to get a new head coach that wins a national championship. I think there's like nothing more fun during March with that happening, you know, just people building to their legacies or adding a national championship, you know, like Mark Few, Tennessee, these guys, all great coaches. You had a national championship on top of their resumes, and it's like they're now in an elite level of tier with head coaches in that competition. You know, they did it. They got over the hump. That's huge.
I would agree. So I know we're not a spread podcast, but we
like to dabble.
We like to dabble. The line for that game, UConn San Diego State, is 10.5. And I think that feels really nice, like hits with ease.
You UConn. Think UConn clears that?
I think UConn covers
in a Sweet 16 game where we're talking about good matchups. You think they clear that?
Yeah,
they might.
10.5. I would have taken them at like 14.5. They're just
now. Is it
no? No,
is this a rematch? No, it's not.
No.
No. Oh no! No, this is a rematch of last year's national championship game.
And how'd that go?
It did not go well for San Diego State. Final score 59-76. So you're saying we should expect the same?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And with that, we also got a, you know, Clark called it out before we went live on the pod. We got to do a little senior salute to Boo Booey. He was a fun college basketball player to watch. Kind of a rare case of guys in this day and age where you have people that are NIL, just people are transfer crazy. And for someone like Boo Booey, who could have gone basically anywhere, he could have gone to a very nice program other than Northwestern. He stayed there, kind of paved the way for hopefully more players that to do that too, you know, at any respective school. But in this day and age when it's rare for that to happen, I think it's really fun when guys end up staying. It creates, you know, the fans love it. casual fans, if that aren't fans of Northwestern, love it. It's just a fun thing to see. And how can you not like a guy who did that? I thought they'd lose to FAU with it just being the Boo Booey show. But he proved us wrong and didn't put up much of a fight against UConn. But Boo Booey, we salute you. Thank you for your service. And hope you make it out there with whatever you're trying to do.
I actually agree with that. My biggest takeaway from the Northwestern run is FAU and what a disappointment they were, and how the fuck did Dusty May get the Michigan job?
Dude.
How do you not back off of him after the year they had? I mean,
I don't think it was terrible. But if you go off the expectations, yes. They had just transferred conferences into the Memphis's league. Yeah, it didn't live up to expectations, but I'd say by their standards, they had a good season. They returned everybody. So yeah, expectation-wise, it didn't go well. We expected more with they returned everybody, I'm pretty sure. Maybe lost one guy. But this team expected to be in a Final Four again. They're not. What happens? Dusty May is awarded with the head coach position at Michigan. We haven't talked about that. Juwan Howard's gone now. And so is the strength and conditioning coach. So they fired the strength and conditioning coach. Then later they were like, why'd we do that? Juwan, we got to let you go now. So this was kind of justice for the strength and conditioning coach, who, if you don't remember, got into an altercation. Strength and conditioning coach had to just be calling Juwan out on his BS, and they moved on. So justice for our boy. I hope they let him come back. Moving on, we'll go down into the West region here. Because we got, you know, just like everybody thought, we got North Carolina, Alabama coming up. Love that these two teams actually made it. I think they both had to get over some humps. Michigan State, never an easy test to pass Izzo in March. We all know that. But North Carolina handled it. They broke away at the end of the game. It was three nation. It was three city. They just couldn't stop making threes at the end of that game to make the final score. They made it look like the game was a blowout, when in reality, they were throwing punches until the end.
And then
you love Alabama.
Did I say that?
You were popular with them in our Box Out Boys pick. You had them here, and we had them beating North Carolina in this position.
Yeah, and I think I'd like to backpedal on that pick, because I like North Carolina. I think everyone said this North Carolina team's not very good. They don't deserve the one seed. A lot of people thought they were going to get beat by Michigan State up until halftime of that game, and they just answer the bell. That North Carolina team very well could see they're a Final Four team. I think they're the Final Four team out of this region.
I like it. Especially looking at, they'll go against Clemson or Arizona. Don't sleep on Clemson, I guess. But Alabama, I think this is where their defense lets them down. Obviously, if Alabama can control the pace of the game, that's so important for them. That's their whole identity. But they played a shootout against Charleston. It was sad for Charleston. They absolutely dominated. Just like Charleston, Alabama, they were the same thing. Alabama just does it so much better. We saw that. They played one of the weirdest games I've ever seen in the tournament against Grand Canyon. It was chippy. It was aggressive. Great. It was a rock fight. But all in a disgusting way. Moved on. I got to go with North Carolina here too. I think this is the end of the road for Nate Oates.
Yeah. Nate Oates is kind of a creepy guy. Nate Oates looks like a big time Baptist preacher that is definitely funneling the money into his own account. I don't trust him.
Would you like him as your head coach?
I don't know him like that. I wouldn't trust him as my pastor.
Are we sure he's not a pastor? He kind of, now that you say that, he might be. He looks like one of those guys.
If you're an ordained minister, if you're an ordained minister online, can you call yourself a pastor? Or do you have to make the clarification that you got this online and didn't go to 4 years of college? You didn't go to seminary school.
I think maybe it's like when you're able to do weddings.
I'm ordained.
So you can do weddings. So you're technically a pastor.
So I am a pastor.
I think maybe you just clarify when you say it, like, I was ordained by ordainyourself.com.
Maybe only if it's asked.
Yeah.
I'm a pastor.
Yeah. In that case, you don't want to be calling yourself out.
right.
exposing yourself.
So I am a pastor. Feels good. I love my congregation.
I love that for you. God's future. Kids. I can't God's wait kids. To be at the first wedding that you solidify.
It's going to be yours. It's going to be yours.
I hope so. That's kind of what I was place. Thinking in the back of my head, that you'd be the man.
I'll show up with some fucking gnarly ass robe.
The only thing I ask is, the only words you got to say are, you may kiss the bride. That's all I need to hear. That's when I know, okay, we did it.
Well, you have to say I do in there.
Okay. Oh, see, yeah, that's all I need to hear, though. And then you just direct the rest. I'll say the I do's, of course.
You're going to be a vows guy? Are you going to write your own vows? That's pretty popular right now. It's a good sentiment.
It is. I feel like as a guy, bitch. That's always something, and you know, not all guys, but it's not the, you know, girls are definitely getting a little more excited about writing the vows. I'm not saying guys aren't, but I'm saying maybe it's definitely a little more hesitant where you're not getting like, oh, fuck yes. You know, I've been looking forward to this all my life, writing my vows. So that's how I kind of feel about it. I'll take the pace of my future wife, whoever that would be, in that extent or in that regard.
Do you think straight men that get excited about writing their vows are actually just gay men?
No, not at all. I think they have their reasons for loving to do that, and I can't understand it, but I'm not going to knock it if you're about that. Because I think if you're a gay man, which there's nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely.
Obviously. We're at the day and age where you don't even need to say there's nothing wrong with that anymore. If you're a gay man, I think there are signs. There are so many other signs rather than you being excited for your wedding vows for me.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Good.
Clemson.
I think that's valid.
Clemson, Arizona.
I like Clemson.
So if you need somebody to officiate your wedding, you kind of just heard it here first that Clark, our co-host, the co-host, is ordained. And he's ready to go.
I do all weddings. I do all
weddings. All weddings.
All types of relationships.
There you go. There you go.
I like Clemson over Arizona.
I knew you were going to say it. This one's a tough one for me because, I mean, we're talking ACC, who is doing very well in the tournament right now. Are you surprised by that at all? ACC's 6-1, I believe, with the one loss being Virginia.
I'm not. They're good. No. Like, I always show up this time of year. And, like, Ralph can be fucking mad that we were talking shit about the ACC. I'll do it again next year. But they're just, like, not a good regular season conference. I don't really know what it is, but they always show up and play good ball this time of year. And it might just be that they're a little top heavy, but I don't think that's it. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm not shocked, though. It feels like it happens often.
So I was looking into this too, because it does feel like, I mean, if we go like past 10, 15 years, the ACC is, they have probably the most champions, the best record, but since the Big 12 has been crowned the top conference, it's kind of seemed like they've fallen off a little, but they do always perform in the tournament. And so I was looking into why that is. Just, I need answers here in this. And I think something I read that really stood out to me, it seems so obvious when you hear it, but the Big Ten, the Big 12, SEC, they've all got their styles of play. The SEC is athletic, you know, that's how everybody wants to beat you. We saw an uptick in offense this year. The Big 12 is a little more defense grindy down. That's that whole conference style of play. I don't know what the Big Ten's doing, but they're all doing it. But the ACC is just such a clash of styles inside and out. Every team has a different identity. Syracuse isn't doing what Miami's doing. Duke's not doing what North Carolina's doing. They all have their own style of play, which I think prepares them so much more for this tournament than every other conference. Yeah. And I just thought that was really fascinating and such a great point when I was looking into it. There's got to be a reason for their success. And again, they're just ready for that style of play when everything – you know, when they come to the big dance.
When it's time.
Clemson, I'll take it. I'll take it. We'll take the ACC, continue to roll. We got to have somebody. We got to have a 4 seed and up in there. And I think Clemson's the one to do it. 6 seed. Let's go. Moving on, we got the South region. Houston and Duke.
I will possibly kill myself if Duke beats Houston. Not because, like, I have a huge allegiance. I'll just be super bummed if Duke goes Elite Eight at the and Houston loses and we miss out on more Jamal Shedd.
There's no way we're going to. I think this team's dancing. They want to keep dancing. We got Houston going. Houston's going to do it. This Duke team, I think they're playing really good ball right now. But I think, hey, they're about to see the best defense they've ever seen. They're about to see Emmanuel Sharp, LJ Cryer, and Jamal Shedd just show them who they are. And I think it's going to be too much. Kyle Filipowski's a villain. We can't let the villains keep winning. The villains lose here. NC State, Marquette. NC State's doing it. Everybody said they wouldn't. I didn't think they would. You didn't think they would. Here they are in the Sweet 16.
Right.
With a matchup against Marquette, though. I don't love that for them.
It feels good that we're in the Sweet 16. Shout out Cerrone. Come one, come all. We're all part of the Wolf Pack this week.
It's good to be a wee. So you're rooting for them.
I don't really give a shit. Like, this is the game I care about least.
I've never heard someone's name more in my life these past 2 weeks than I have DJ Burns' name. I'll say this is probably the matchup I'm least excited about, too. I don't know why, though. I think it's because the same reason. It's just NC State. We're just ready for the Magic to die out on them, I think. And these other games we know are probably going to go down to the wire. I'm not big on this Marquette team. But I think they have the pieces to do it. I think they've been playing really well. I think the run ends here, but if it doesn't, I hope I'm wrong. I'd love to see an 11 seed keep dancing. They're doing crazy things, and, you know, DJ Burns, that's what it's about, I guess.
So you like Marquette here?
Yeah, what do you think?
My viewpoint is I think NC State just has a little more dog in them than Marquette. But
I agree.
Marquette has they have Kolek. I'll roll Marquette here. We have a beautiful chalky Elite Eight coming on right now, though, and I like it. I'm a fan.
I love it. That seems to be the name of this season. NC State. I think this matchup is intriguing to me because you got DJ Burns, who's like a 6'9", 285-pound guy, going up against Marquette's golden big man of Oso Iguodala, who Tyler Kolek just loves to feed if he's not popping up shots himself. But I think this NC State team hasn't run into a team like Marquette yet. That Texas Tech team, that was a great win for NC State. You know, I'm not taking away that credit. They handled them. They made them look they made them look like a shell of the team some people had seen. But honestly, it's one of those hindsight 2020 things again where you just it makes sense. Texas Tech really hadn't done anything crazy all year. Yeah, they popped off in the Big 12 here and there, but when you look back at their schedule, it makes sense that they lost. They've had some of these head scratchers too. In this matchup, I think it's too much. Oso Iguodala was the biggest man they played. They just blew past that 14 seed. Who the fuck was that again?
Who they just beat?
Oakland, yeah. Oakland, good for them. Great story. Obviously, their Cinderella run came to an end, but I think this team's just – it's a different animal here. This isn't Texas Tech. This isn't Oakland.
I agree. I'm comfortable pushing Marquette on. Either way, the winner of this game comes to the end of the road. Next round.
Yeah, we know that. We're already locking in Houston to the Final Four. I will say, just for the people that were wondering, I did watch that NC State-Oakland game. I was impressed a little bit with what NC State did. It's not too hard of a job, though. Or it's not the craziest defensive scheme to just have to make somebody dribble instead of catching and shooting. Tyler Golkey still had an impressive game by all measures. Just sorry he didn't go 10 for 20 again. Yeah, good for that, a future accountant.
That's what March is about. That guy gets a little run. That guy
if we didn't have him, who'd we have?
Right? I mean, seriously. The Oregon.
You got a B-Dubs deal?
You got a B-Dubs deal.
Fuck yeah.
B-Dubs is on that.
Dude, we'll you save that Oregon bit. We'll get to them in a second. I absolutely love Dana Altman's Oregon team. So we take Marquette. We got Houston beating them next. So we already got our winner coming out of the South. The Midwest, we got Purdue, Zaga. I could see us being divided here. Because I'll tell you right now, I still believe in this Purdue redemption tour after losing to the 16 seed last year.
I think Purdue wins by 15 or 20.
Fuck they yeah, are. They are locked in.
They are legitimately the best team in this tournament. Them and UConn. I think all signs are leading to a Purdue UConn championship.
I would not hate that at all. It's so weird though. Just Zach Edey is just so different out there. He's still not always exciting to watch. They don't play the sexiest brand of basketball.
He's never exciting.
When you get the guards going, I love to see that.
The white men on that team are, as people would say, dangerous.
They can be dangerous. Yeah,
I saw them
start the game out, you know, a little cold, and then they finished so impressive. Purdue's rebuild from last year, having one of the worst 3-point abilities in the game, to this year having top two, top three. I don't know what it is, but they're killing it. So who plays them, Creighton or Tennessee?
So this is, I mean, this is the battle of
this is where cold-ass we can
white boys.
Yeah.
This is the battle of the cold-ass
Baylor Shireman.
Don't connect.
Yeah, I think Creighton's lucky to be here.
What?
I think that Oregon game.
It's March. You need
that Oregon game was insane. Oh, of course. And how many times do we see a team get lucky in a game? You know, that FAU versus Memphis last year. The call went towards FAU. Memphis fans are still pissed about it. And then they went on a Final Four run, which could have just been ended right then and there. And now we got... Oregon should have won that game in regulation. They couldn't get it done. I got to think of this guy's name because we weren't following Oregon too much during the season for obvious reasons, but Cousinard and Endante for Oregon. Cousinard had his grandma there watching the second game ever. She doesn't like to fly a lot, so she was able to drive out and see him play in Indiana. Love those little storylines right like that. And they were shooting lights out. It was just them. Cousinard passed a little interesting stat for the Pac-12, which is now going to be dissolved. He beat out, and I don't know the first one, Lou Alcindor.
Yes, and Reggie Miller. Abdul-Jabbar. That's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Lou Alcindor.
Wait, what?
Yeah, he changed his name to Kareem when he converted to
Islam.
Yes, Lou Alcindor. If you ever see that name, that's Kareem.
No fucking way.
What a fun moment right now. Yes.
Dude, I was like, I should. Okay, so the record here is through two games of your first NCAA tournament.
Okay.
How many points are you putting up? I think he finished with more, but he had 69 points through two games at 51.8 seconds in double OT. I had to mark that down. It was a Pac-12 record. That had stood since Lou Alcindor, who was number one, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Reggie Miller. I mean, you say those names, you know those names. So I think that's sick for him to be up there, especially for the last year of the Pac-12. Just kind of lay it all on there, you know, slap his balls on the table and show people what he was about. So I got to shout him out there. I thought this, if anybody could have done it, this Oregon team could have beaten Creighton. But I'll go with you and say after their luck, the luck's going to keep going, and they're going to get past Creighton, or they're going to get past Tennessee. They just have too much going for them.
They do, and I want to plug this here because everyone loves to talk about Baylor Shireman, Ryan Cockbrenner. Those two are not the two best players on that team. The best player on that team is Trey Alexander, night in and night out.
And they wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Trey Alexander, and if we're calling uncredited people, it was not Baylor Shireman and Kalkbrenner that won that game. Obviously, them being on the court against Oregon helped so much. Helped. They did their part. Right. They got so many points in. But Kalkbrenner, defensively, his presence there just changes things. But offensively, he wasn't getting as much as he's used to. Shireman wasn't taking as many shots as I usually see him take. It was the Steven Ashworth and Trey Alexander show.
Right.
So if they got four guys that can do it, that's always a recipe for success, especially against a more one-dimensional Tennessee team.
Yeah. And I actually think I like Farabello, comes off the bench for him. Usually pretty good spark. Didn't have a great game that night. But he's a guy that's going to show up when it matters, I think. So
yeah,
I like
this
Creighton team. And you know what? While we're in the Elite Eight in the Midwest region, let's just talk Purdue Creighton because the Cockbrenner Zach Edey matchup,
it's inevitable.
What is going to happen there? I have no idea who's going to win that matchup. I want to say Zach Edey because he's 300 pounds.
Kalkbrenner is 6'11", 7 feet.
7-1, 270.
Damn. Dude, see, that's why this feels inevitable. There's no way people want to see. They want to see that big man matchup if Purdue makes it.
I do.
What would happen? I think Edie obviously has the advantage down low, but I don't know. Does this negate some of the fouls when we finally have somebody almost as tall as Edie working up against him? Where, I don't know. Does that make the refs not blow the whistle as much because they just see two big guys going at it rather than, oh, that they're just all abusing Edie because you got to double or triple team him down there. That's kind of the strategy usually. When that happens, it leads to fouls. But this is a fascinating matchup. I agree with you.
Yeah. So, and I don't know. I think in that matchup, I think it comes down to it. I like Purdue.
You like Purdue to be able to, and I mean, Creighton's, oh my God. Both teams have great guards. Both teams have great ball handlers. Both teams have huge big men that they run their offense through and facilitate you in their defensive scheme. They just drive you to the big man and they just, it's like, can you get past our big guy? Is basically their defensive game plan. And a lot of teams can't. Crane doesn't turn it over a lot. I'm fascinated by this matchup. I want to go Purdue here solely for the reason that it's just their year. And that's kind of what you got to trust in this moment. But I also think everybody can match up well with Creighton's players. But Creighton, this is going to be a dogfight is all I'm seeing out of this.
I like Purdue. You like Creighton?
I like Purdue. No, I think it's their year to keep dancing. Creighton almost went to the Final Four last year. So this is this would be back-to-back Elite Eights for them. That's pretty nice. Yeah, cool. I got to ride Purdue here. Oh, this is a tough one, though. This is the closest matchup in the Elite Eight that I see going on right now, because now we move on to UConn, Iowa State.
I think we know what we probably have to do.
Do we have to? We know.
It's like taking your dog out back and shooting in the head.
It
sucks, this but is... your dog's sick. You know it's the right thing to do.
If this game happens, it's going to be a bloodbath. UConn, I just see UConn taking this.
A bloodbath? What the fuck do you mean by that?
Maybe not.
You think they blow us out?
If Iowa State stays in that game, you know, within 10, I think I'd chalk that up as a way to compete against that elite-ass team, guys.
That is so goddamn disrespectful.
I know, but you know how hesitant I get about Iowa State. That's not how I feel when the game's going on.
Go ahead.
So we move on UConn just for obvious reasons. It's, you know, Illinois doesn't have their defense figured out, but UConn does. And yeah. UConn's got their offense figured out. They're just way too complete of a team that I think they kind of expose Iowa State's offensive inefficiencies at times. I think we'd have to have a really good shooting night. I'm not worried about our defense. I think we'd be able to handle our own. Otzelberger will be able to draw up some schemes, or at least his assistant coach that handles defense will. But UConn ultimately wins. North Carolina, Clemson. This is the battle of North Carolina right here. North Carolina would have so much pressure in this game. They can't lose to Clemson.
And I think probably give me Clemson.
I love it. We got the one seed UConn. We got the one seed Houston, one seed Purdue. But we're not going to have all one seeds because Clemson's going to get in there. Clemson's feeling disrespected. They heard everybody's talk. We're going to lose to New Mexico State. They said, fuck that. Moved on.
We're rolling.
And they just keep moving on. Once they beat Arizona, North Carolina won't be a problem for them. So we got UConn versus Clemson. Fuck. This is where we're at a point now. I just don't know how to pick against this UConn team.
Yeah, send them. I think you have to. They beat Clemson. Sorry for all of our Clemson listeners.
Sorry too, because I'm trying to think of any advantage Clemson would have in this game. And there's none.
None. Yeah,
everything Clemson does, UConn just does it better. They've got a good PJ Hall, another cold ass white boy, but UConn's got, you know, five players that could be their number one guy. So UConn's too good. They go on to the championship game. We have to have that conversation. Do they repeat? Houston or Purdue? What are we going here? I like the Purdue show, but hey, it's like Kelvin Sampson. Show.
Listen, there's been some gutsy wins, but no team has impressed me like Purdue though, so far.
They look so complete. You can tell that all that's on their mind, especially Zach Edey's, is their losses the past 2 to 3 years. How disappointing they've been to the fans, and knowing it's Edey's last year, to just, they're on a mission. This is destiny. We got UConn versus Purdue, national championship game. I like Purdue to win it. Oh, baby.
I
think UConn gets so close.
I think they get close too. And I think Zach Edey gets Donovan Clingan in trouble, in foul trouble in that game. And I think that's the difference. Give me Purdue. I like Purdue. Good for Matt Painter.
We're saying Matt Painter gets it done this year. And he has to do it against somebody that's gotten it done too. That would just solidify the legacy even more of, wow, you didn't just do it against a Clemson or North Carolina, which would still be impressive. You did it against the one coach left in the field now who actually did it. And he did it last year, brought his team back, and you showed him your dictator ways won't work against me.
No, no, no. Not today.
All right, there it is. We'll pick it. We got to put a point total in. Love doing that. That's kind of a little fun part. What do you think Vegas sets this at?
I'm going to say the final of that one is 67-59 Purdue.
Whoa.
Some late field goals or free throws.
Okay, so total would be 136. I like that.
I like the quick math out of you there.
Hey, it's not my best subject, but when it comes to the sports betting, 136 for the total.
To 67-59 final?
That's what you said, yes. And I don't mind that.
So 126?
Oh, you're right. All right. Exposed live on air.
I mean, I didn't want to
126?
I didn't want to expose you there, but I didn't feel like we could both go down. Felt like I was going to go down with you on the math there if I let that fly.
Damn.
Now I feel a little bit bad about.
No. You did the right thing. You got a call out from friend to friend here. You wouldn't be a good co-host if you didn't call me out right there. Because everybody else would have known. They'd be laughing behind my back. I don't love 126. But who knows? I'm going to go with it.
Tell me what you think.
I liked 136. I liked where your head was at there. Because we got like the thing is, as good as their offenses are, these defenses are very efficient too. So I could see it turning into a slugfest. You just know the fans wouldn't love a 59-66 game, whatever we said. But 126 is a total. Purdue winning, Matt Painter etching his name in legacy. That would be absolutely elite. And that means the statistic of a team losing to a 16 seed and then winning the following year, winning it all, is 100%. North Carolina did it, or Virginia did it, and then Purdue potentially does it this year. So if you want to listen to a little recap on some rundown of the games, we did it last night. I believe the episode dropped on Monday of this week. We did it with the Popcorn Boys, Ralphie Campiano and Mike Cerrone. And yeah, we kind of ran through some of the old games there. So if you want some preview or recap on that, go there. If you're looking for us next week, we'll be here to talk. God, we'll just have the Final Four.
Yeah, that's okay though.
Electric.
We'll get into some next week. We'll harp a little bit more on some transfers that we're seeing and some coaching changes.
I love it.
We'll have a great show for you next week. A phenomenal show. A show that you're going to tell your kids about. You're going to tell your grandma and grandpa about it. Aunts and uncles, lovers, side lovers. You're going to want to tell people about the show next week.
And we'll be here to talk with you about it next week. So thanks for coming to the show. We love you guys. We love March Madness. We love dancing, and we're going to keep doing it right up until the end. Clark, close us out, as always.
March, we're through week one, on to week two. As we dance through this gauntlet, keep your friends close. Keep your enemies closer. There are people out there that will root against your bets, root against your brackets for their own gain. Remember those people. And when the time comes where you can laugh at them, do it. Don't take the high road. Take the low road. Laugh at them. Make fun of them. Take money from them. Because remember, when you were in the foxhole in March, they weren't in it with you. They were gone. Absent. Like an absent father. They weren't there. So don't be there for them. Be selfish. When April comes, be selfish. And that's my final word to you tonight. As always, be great. Good night. God bless.